The programming on 88.1 FM is made possible in part by WWER Watts members, who show their support of community radio by donating online at wwer.org/membership. If you like our programming, please consider contributing to wwer.org/membership. Welcome to Town Matters on WWER in Colonial Beach. Once again on Town Matters, we're going to sit down with our mayor, Robin Schick, to do a little question and answer session. Welcome, Robin.
Hello, Ted. It's great to be here with you today.
Thank you. I'll jump right into it. We had an incident at the 4th of July period where we had some sewage from the sewage treatment plant here in Colonial Beach leak into Goldman Creek and into the Potomac River. And a lot of people were not thrilled with, I think, the way that the incident was handled, and in particular, how the town communicated what was going on and what they should or shouldn't be doing in terms of was it safe to swim and those sorts of things. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened and when?
Sure. So the initial incident report explained to us as council members that the incident happened overnight between the 3rd and the 4th, that as soon as public works employees arrived on scene, they went into immediate action, but that the software system that monitors the sewer plant had malfunctioned, and that included the alarm system. So one of the biggest parts of this particular spill incident is that the alarms that would have gone out to public works and for response to prevent further spillage, you know, didn't go off because of this entire software system failure.
And one of the problems, of course, is happening on the 4th of July means there weren't staff on site.
Yeah, so there were, you know, we have to coordinate with a lot of other government agencies when a spill incident occurs or any kind of incident at the wastewater treatment plant. There's lots of parts of the treatment plant that are regulated through DEQ, through the Virginia Department of Health, and through other state agencies. So being on a national federal holiday made that very difficult.
You mentioned DEQ. Just describe for our listeners what that acronym is.
Department of Environmental Quality.
Okay. And that's a Virginia...
Correct.
...agency.
Okay. Yes. Sorry. Yeah. So, you know, we had to collaborate with those state agencies, you know, follow their protocols and things like that. But the emergency, as soon as we did know about it, I mean, our public works guys, I just kudos to their response at that moment, because I think that's gotten a little bit overlooked in the failures in communication that happened, which, you know, we'll talk more about. But that the immediate response, as soon as they knew it was an all hands on deck situation, and vacuum and cleaning, and I mean, you know, immediate.
Yeah, perhaps that's worth mentioning, is that just because word didn't get out right away doesn't mean that nothing happened right away.
Right.
So the folks at Public Works immediately started doing what they knew they needed to do to in order to mitigate the issue, stop the leak.
And on the 4th of July, where people are spending time with their families doing cookouts, they were all called in to come deal with this instead, to deal with our public sewage. So, you know, I just want to thank the families of our public works guys who, you know, basically had to leave their families during that day in order to come respond to it.
So let's go into just a little bit of what happened and why it happened.
Yeah, so the SCADA system, that's an acronym, S-C-A-D-A is how it's spelled, is a software and system that basically runs the plant and sends alarms when certain pumps or things are not working. That SCADA system had a malfunction, a glitch that happened, and spiked, and valves that should have opened didn't open, and alarms that should have sent messages to our employees and to alert people that there was an issue didn't happen. And so the whole system is being replaced now. We have authorized emergency funding for it through funds that we have set aside from the sewer department. So we're already looking, we're, you know, the replacement of that system is already in the works to be have an entire replacement. And we're going to add a maintenance contract to it, which is $10,000 a year. That's never been done before. And that's going to make sure that this software has updates that need to happen every year, that if it needs to get upgraded or replaced, that that is already being maintained. And so we need to keep up with that better than we have been.
Let's go back to the day of for a moment and talk about on the 4th of July, people started responding, but nobody in the general populace of the town was aware of what was going on. The town started dealing with these agencies from Virginia to try and determine what your next steps were meant to be, what is the severity of the incident. Talk to us a little bit about how that went. Of course, again, as you said, it was on a public holiday, which meant you told me earlier, you couldn't even reach these agencies on the 4th.
Yeah, a lot of people were obviously on vacation. Some of the regular contacts we have during that time, nobody was in the office at these state agencies as well. I mean, there's a lot of complications about the holiday factoring into it, but council got an incident report on the 5th. That was when we found out about it, but there was a lot of mixed communication and also time needed to collaborate between those, because there are protocols, there are regulations involved and that need to take place. And so there was testing that needed to be done, and also site evaluations. And so people from these agencies also needed to get on the ground and physically come, you know, to see it.
And I guess that took a little bit of time as well.
Yes.
So let's talk about if you have to coordinate with all of these agencies, was there a procedure in place to do that? Or was this something where people are a little confused about what they're supposed to be doing and how they're supposed to be doing it? Because you mentioned mixed messaging.
Sure. And I guess I should clarify right from the bat that I, as mayor, do the emergency comms. And so I was not the person on the ground. I don't work at the plant. It's the town manager that's coordinating all of this. And I think she was following all the regular protocols that we had in place at the time. Obviously, we're looking into how to improve that communication, especially the coordination across state lines with the state of Maryland, because I think a big part of the mixed messaging came from interstate agencies not communicating as well as we should, and also having differences in regulation, differences in thresholds of, you know, how they handle emergency situations and what to do about them.
Yeah, so in this incident, Maryland has, however they deal with these sorts of incidents, and Virginia has their ways of dealing with these incidents. Because it's the Potomac River, it involves both states and both agencies. But I gather that the communication between the two states and their respective agencies wasn't what it really should have been. And there was some messaging that kind of went out independent of each other.
Yeah, we were getting mixed messages, and mixed messages were going back out to the public. And that was a big part of the unfortunate communications issue involved.
And that's certainly what I saw on social media and elsewhere. People got very upset about this incident. And I think the thing that got them most upset, they understand that things happen and accidents can happen, and we can talk about preventing them and that sort of thing. But they want to know. What's going on? Is it safe to go into the beach? I've got kids. I was fishing in that water, whatever. I was swimming in that water. They want to know. And I think people felt that that information was being held back. And it may not be that was the intent, but that was the...
Yeah. I don't think anybody was trying to withhold information. I think they want to make sure information was accurate before it got out. And then you're fighting this timeline of how fast can you get information out? And then, oh my gosh, what I said accurate? Mm-hmm. Right. We can do that better. I know that we can. The coordination with Maryland and these health agencies is going to improve, because we now, from this incident, have a much stronger relationship with the people that are over there who, need to recognize that you know, what they're doing has an impact on the side in the state, and certainly on the residents of the town of Colonial Beach. And I don't mind if we need to close the beaches, we need to close the beaches. That's, we're going to take every precaution we need to do, but we need to have clear messaging with all of these partners in order to make those kinds of decisions.
So what is going on right now to try and deal with the fallout from this? Now, number one, are we still testing the water? Are we still concerned about what's in the water?
Yeah, I have seen a lot more collaboration with riverkeepers. I think we need to continue to collaborate with them and their testing. All of the testing that we have and from the state of Maryland has come back with great standard quality reports. We didn't have a single test during that time period that came back as an alert. Now, I'm not to say that people didn't have fear about that. I was swimming in the water. My kid was swimming in the water, and there was this conflicting messaging. It's very confusing, very concerning. So I don't want to understate the severity of the issue. But, as far as actual test results, everything came back as being within standard quality or above standard quality.
So at no point was the water considered unsafe to swim in?
Not according to any of the test results that we had back.
And what specifically is the town doing in terms of dealing with this kind of incident and or any kind of incident, really, in terms of improving communications? You said you're in touch with your counterparts in Maryland. Talk more about what other things are being done to kind of fix this.
So there's a post-incident report that's underway right now. We had an immediate incident report, but this is much more robust. There was a lot more questions involved from council. That's going to be presented at the September meeting. And so we may have more action items that come out of this. This is a process. We have obviously already approved funding for replacing the SCADA system that broke during this incident, adding the maintenance contract to that, and replacing the entire alarm systems and adding a backup to the alarm system so that hopefully even if the alarm system doesn't go off, the backup alarm does. We did this for the water system at our pump stations already. We had been working through the water system side of this. So we're going to use an alarm system that is communicating the same way as our water system now too. So a lot of upgrades happening, capital improvements. It all takes money too and funding. So, we're trying to use that funding, in smart ways to get ahead of this. The central drainage project that's happening downtown that is, disruptive to parking and events and all of these things. Part of why we can't delay that project is because INI is what created one of these spills a few years ago. And
INI?
Infiltration and inundation. Infiltration is leakage through cracked pipes, and inundation is direct connections of stormwater to a sewer system.
Okay.
So both of those things create issues with our sewer system because sewer systems are meant to process sewage, not rainwater. And actually, the more diluted of rainwater, the more gallons this plant is processing. But two, those microorganisms that break up the sewage. We have a really clean process. Like what comes out of our sewer system after it has gone through our process is drinkable water. I know that seems like insane to think about drinking it after that, but that's like the level, quality level, right? Those microorganisms that process that thrive on the actual sewage. And when it's diluted, they die. So we don't want stormwater going into the plant. That's another thing that can exacerbate this program or this process. And so we've got to, get a hold of the INI issues. We've got to replace the SCADA system. Where both of those lifts are happening right now.
This isn't going to be an ongoing process. As you said, that there's a longer report being done on what exactly happened and when and why. And then based upon the information you learn from that, you're going to probably take other steps?
There have to be other steps from that. I just don't want to get ahead of.
You don't know what they are
yet. Yeah, working together with everybody on that.
You're listening to Town Matters on WWER. I'm Ted Tate talking to Mayor Robin Schick. So let's move on to when an incident does happen. What are we doing to improve the way that you respond to those issues in terms of communication, messaging, all of that? Well, obviously, that's somewhere where I think people really felt that the town really didn't do what they were supposed to do. The town's job is to fix these problems and to let people, the citizenry, know whether it's safe or not and what they should be doing. And the town, I think, failed pretty heartily on that.
Yeah, well, and I think there was some mixed communication about what the initial, how bad the initial spill was, what the risk was to the public. You know, if you don't have the right answers to those questions, or if the answers to those questions are constantly changing, your messaging is changing, right?
And that's apparently what happened here.
Right.
You were getting conflicting messages. So what are you doing to pull that together and make sure that doesn't happen again?
Yeah, a big part of this is having the best contacts and having regular contact with those people that are involved in this process. Like, I know Dahlgren Navy Base does this once a year. They have a fake disaster and go through. Mm-hmm. Who do we talk to? How do we talk to them? I mean, I think implementing, practice at this would be a good first step in that.
Is that something the town is planning, or is it something you're just thinking we should do?
I'm suggesting it.
Okay. And as mayor, you can certainly push that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a collaborative process with all of council, but I think that's one of the suggestions and the types of things that we're thinking about and how to improve communication.
And but in the end, the communication falls on the town manager at this point in terms of their responsibilities are. There's got to be a single person who puts out the message, and right now I think that's the town manager, isn't it?
Sure. Well, the town manager is the director of emergency management in the town. You need a head of that. I mean, you need it to be a single person. You can't respond in a critical incident.
You can't have a town council vote.
Yeah, with 10 bosses and try and, you know, and call in a special meeting. We can work with those things as quickly as government can, but government is robust and sometimes, you know, slow.
Yes.
In everything that they do. Purposely slow, I believe, I've come to understand. But the town manager is the immediate person, and she's the one who writes the messages. And code red, if you haven't signed up, I know I say this on every radio show that we do, but code red is the town's way of messaging, sending alert messaging to citizens. And you can sign up on the website with your phone. They can text you, call you, email you, or all three. And I get all three from the town every time a message goes out.
But the difficulty is that messaging just fell a little short this time around.
It flip-flopped. That was part of it, you know. The original messaging was there was an incident, it was critical, but the impact is this. And then it flip-flopped to, no, just get in, the impact is that. And then it was, no, actually the impact is this. And I think that is what caused, for me, you know, even just as a citizen, a regular mom, you know, in town, you know, confusion.
Well, I think so too. I mean, yeah. I think
I get that.
I think that frustrated everybody.
They absolutely were like,
well, what's the story? Which is right?
Yeah, myself included.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm hoping that the town is going to really take a long, hard look at how they devise their messaging. And I understand that you want to get it right rather than necessarily get it fast. But if it's 2 days later, it's useless.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Robin, I think we've sort of covered this. Obviously, more to come on this topic, because it's an evolving thing and the council is going to be discussing it further. Is there anything more, though, you want to say about this topic right now?
Just the ask people to stay tuned to town hall meetings. If this is a topic that's really important to you and you're interested in it, to come and speak at public comment. Keeping this topic top of mind is really important to me, because that is how funding gets prioritized, to not defer the maintenance. That's how action happens, to not just say, we'll wait for another day and we need to pay for it and we need to do it now before the next spill happens or before the next, you know, incident happens. And so I think it's really important to just, it's okay to come to council meetings and say, hey, I'm still worried about this. Are you guys, and keeping us accountable?
And the message I'm hearing from you today is, if this is an important issue to you, then tell the council. Let them know.
What democracy is here for, and that's why we have public comment and input, and I welcome that.
Okay. Since this is generally a Q&A session that we ask questions that people have sent to us, we will do a few of those.
Okay.
You're listening to Town Matters on WWER. I'm Ted Tate talking to Mayor Robin Schick. We had a question, and it's been sitting in my inbox for a little while, and apologies to John Murphy, who sent this question in. He had asked if there are any plans for the empty buildings on Hawthorne Street closest to the pier and across the street from the new condos. I know the building he's talking about, a little brick shop with windows up front. It's been empty for some time. Do you know it's a private property, but do you know anything about it?
I know it was sold maybe about a year ago. I do not know of any plans for this, and I wish I had more information for Mr. Murphy, but the town doesn't own that property, and so it's not a part. You know, maybe that's where that question's coming from. It's not a part of the Dotson development. It's not a town-owned property. It's private property. So, you know, just have to get a hold of the owner and find out what their intentions are.
Talk to your realtor.
There you go. Yeah, John, you want to buy it? I don't know.
Just as an aside, it does look like a great piece of real estate if somebody wanted to put a shop there, but it's just sat empty for some time.
Yeah, I do hope to see it activated.
We had another person ask, when it is determined that a tree is cut down without a permit, what are the ramifications?
Yeah, so to cut a tree down in the town of Colonial Beach, you do need a permit, which you can get at Building and Zoning Department. And there is a replacement schedule. If you get the permit, then you have to replace it 2-to-1, 3-to-1 if you're in what's called the RPA or the riparian buffer area. If you cut down a tree without getting a permit, there's a $1,000 fine.
And you still have to plant two
more
trees.
And you still have to plant trees, is my understanding, and there will be a violation from code enforcement. And if you see somebody doing something they shouldn't be doing, you can report it to code enforcement.
And that's back to the town website. There's a place on the town website to report these kinds of things.
Exactly. Yeah, the form on the town website for citizen complaints or community concerns, and you can fill that out, and you can do it and get a response back, or you can just send the complaint in, or you can go to town hall too.
So. All right, we're throwing easy balls at you today, but that's
okay.
These
are a hard one. The first right off the
get go. Yeah, we spend a lot of time talking about a hard subject, so got to give you a few softballs. I noticed something for the first time some time ago, and I put this on the list myself. I heard a loud fire siren wailing through the town from a couple different points. I think there's a siren at the firehouse, and there's one on the point that acts like a repeater. I heard this siren going. I had never heard it before, and I did not know. What did that mean? I was like, does this mean there's an air raid? Does this mean I should shelter in place? What's going on? It ran for a few minutes and then it stopped, and I never knew what it was. But I asked Robin to find out for me, and Robin, you did some research.
I did. I wanted to answer this question, but I wanted to make sure I had consulted with Chief Roby beforehand. So I called Chief Roby and asked him about it. The fire siren is an older piece of equipment in town that was used to call in our volunteer firefighters throughout town to the firehouse to respond to an incident. It still functions, and dispatch can enact it at their discretion. Dispatch does not do it very often, mainly because people then call the firehouse thinking there's a tornado or a hurricane warning or a tsunami or something.
Like I did.
Right, yeah. And so it's actually kind of disruptive to have it go off because the volunteers are alerted by their cell phones and their radios dispatch. I mean, there's a lot of other ways that the volunteers are alerted now with technology. But the truth is that lower in the county in Kinsale and other places, they still are using this type of system. to call in their volunteer departments. So the town still has one too, and dispatch pretty much only, the reason why you haven't heard it a lot before is because they only use it on a structural fire for the most part. So you haven't heard it because, you know, it's not a common everyday experience to have a structural fire. And we did have one, and it resulted in a fatality, and my heart goes out to the Mother's Head family and that, and I think that's why you heard the siren. It was an all hands on deck situation for the fire department that day.
So it catches those people who volunteer for the fire department who might not have their cell phones with them or might be outside in a pool or something like that, and maybe they hear it and maybe they respond.
Yeah, it's not for your everyday citizen. No. And it's not to alert you to shelter in place or to evacuate.
It lets you know somebody's house is on fire.
Right. It lets you know somebody's house is on fire and pray for them. But I think that if we do have a critical incident that's storm related or tornado warning, we do send out alerts on Code Red. So I'm just going to bring that alert system back up, sign up on Code Red on the website, because if you want to know whether to shelter in place or whether a tornado is coming, that is the system that's going to tell you that.
All right. One last one. And it's from a resident. For the residents on Lynn Haven and the children walking to Torrey Smith Park, she says traffic appears to be dangerously fast and heavy many times of day. We know this because cars and trucks use it to avoid the stop signs or the one-way restrictions on Douglas by Town Hall. What can we do to convince the town to eliminate the one-way restrictions for the road in front of School Hill townhomes and the town offices along Douglas? This would allow the volume of vehicles to be split between two roads rather than forcing the residents of Lynn Haven to take the entire burden. There are a lot of fewer residents to be affected on Douglas than on Lynn Haven. So essentially, this resident is concerned about people speeding down the road and endangering kids who are using Torrey Smith Park.
Yeah, and I think there's also a suggestion of a solution involved in this question, right? That if we make another road two-way, that would relieve the stress off of the one road. So it's kind of backwards, this one, a little bit. The reason why Douglas is one-way is because it has, or originally had, the school system on it, and it still has the town municipal building on it. Both of those required ADA access because they're municipal facilities. The only way to access the town municipal hall without using stairs is on the Douglas side. And the width of the road does not meet VDOT standards to park on that side unless it is a one-way. So it will not become a two-way so long as that municipal building is in the middle of that neighborhood on that road, with that being the only handicap accessible entrance.
So bottom line is the road would have to be widened in order to do this.
Right. Yes.
Which ain't going to happen, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a pretty big expense. I think there is a lot of heavier traffic on Lynn Haven. Part of it is the construction is now into Washington Avenue. And so people are using Lynn Haven as an alternative to Washington, even, to avoid the construction slowdowns that have happened there. So I expect the traffic on Lynn Haven to actually increase. And that's not, nobody's going to like that, right? Just recently, though, we did a traffic study on Jackson Street because we had some complaints about speeding and traffic calming measures and how to alleviate it there. And they ran a study program. It was collaborative with the county and it involved car counting and speed tracking and other kinds of calming measures and safety, taking a look at the entire area safety-wise. I'd like to see the same thing on Lynn Haven. I mean, that data that we got back from the Jackson Street report, we just got that back last week, and it was pretty robust. And while I'm not sure that, you know, there is a conclusion yet as to what we're going to recommend for the Jackson Street, it was great to have done that study. I mean, this is the first time I had seen that level of data-driven decision-making on a street study. A lot of times it's requests, but I think we've got to be using the data to direct the solutions. So that's
an interesting point. I mean, you've got a citizen who sees a small piece of the puzzle and goes, oh, this is bad because people are speeding down the street and there are kids on the street. But there's more involved to it. And so in Jackson, you're collecting data and trying to determine, yeah, maybe we want to do something about this, but what's the best solution for this? And do you know what options you're considering there?
Well, one of the suggestions on Jackson was line painting, that because the street doesn't have the yellow lines on the edges, or white line, I guess it is on the edges. I don't work for EDOT, but the road seems wider than the traffic lane should really be. And you visually narrow the road by adding the white lines, and it slows people down when the lane narrows. There's other things, you know, because I think speed bumps have been mentioned, but there's other kinds of traffic calming things as well. But speed bumps is one option. Planting trees actually is a traffic calming measure. Adding in one of those signs that has the digital reader on it to tell you how fast you're going is a traffic calming measure. So we're still investigating, you know, what to do on Jackson. And I think there are some recommendations out of the report. But I think we'll be implementing something there.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps you could consider doing a study like this on Lynn Haven,
what you're suggesting. Yeah, and I think this is a great place to do a study. I think Lynn Haven is an extension of Jackson Street in many ways, and a lot of the issues we're seeing on Jackson maybe are also going that direction on Lynn Haven. So I would say Lynn Haven should be next on the docket.
So Robin, if somebody wants to take this to the next step or suggest that the town do a study or whatever, what's the best way of communicating that?
Yeah, I think out of this question, I've already communicated with the town manager to suggest Lynn Haven be a study point.
But so, if somebody else who hasn't written to us wants to suggest this to the council or to you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Send the form in. Send the complaint form in. Contact your local government. Yeah, or contact your local government officials. You can email me at rschick@colonialbeachva.gov. You can email town council at towncouncil@colonialbeachva.gov. That goes to all seven of us at one time. You can email the town manager at townmanager@colonialbeachva.gov, or you can email all of those things at one time. But bring it to our attention, what your concerns are. Generally, it's a complaint-based system, which has its pros and its cons. I won't say that's a perfect system to have, but if we're hearing a lot of similar complaints, especially if it's a neighborhood that's being affected and they all have, you know, the same issues, it warrants being looked into. So,
Robin Schick, before we say goodbye, was there anything else you wanted to cover today that maybe we didn't get to? There's always more, I know. And we'll have more questions for you next month. But in the meantime, any final thoughts?
My final thought for this session is that school is back in session, and one of my favorite Colonial Beach activities is going to support the Drifters sports teams. And if you, as a citizen of this town or a resident or a weekender, have not done this yet, I really encourage you to go to a Friday Night Lights traditional Colonial Beach football game. Do it. Put it on your schedule as the thing to do. Tickets are now digitally done. You can do them on an app and everything. We're like coming into the 21st century, I think. And you can take your golf cart and you can sit on your golf cart and watch a hometown football game and root for our local team. I also have attended a JV and varsity volleyball game. And the girls' volleyball schedule is on the school's website, cbschools.net. And both of our volleyball teams are phenomenal. It's so much fun to watch these girls. They are so talented. I was like up out of the bench rooting for them. So I just really encourage people to get out and come support our local Drifters as the sports seasons are underway. They need your cheers.
Mayor Robin Schick, a real Drifter.
Absolutely. Through and through.
Thank you very much for your time today on Town Matters.
Thanks.
If you enjoy the programming on WWER, please consider making a donation. You can find out more at wwer.org/membership.